Thanks, Judy. Hi, everybody. My name is Don, compulsive eater and food addict from Connecticut. January was 42 years for me in OA. I've never left, staying and maintaining a triple-digit weight loss for close to 40 years now. OA saved my life, literally. I came to the program grossly obese, suicidal, and an atheist. Other than that, I had everything going for me. I had stood for a long time on a bridge over the Hudson River in upstate New York in the middle of the night, about a month before I waddled into my first OA meeting in a rehab in Durham, North Carolina in 1982. I call myself a grateful compulsive eater and a food addict because the disease led me to OA, which helped me move from wanting to die to wanting to live. It showed me how to change the thinking at the root of my unconsciously using food for comfort and escape that eventually crossed the line into addiction, physiological food addiction. So food wasn't the real problem. Even close to 400 pounds, food wasn't the problem. Food was the symptom of dysfunctional and counterproductive, self-destructive thinking. Pick your word, whatever you like. Getting well was about opening my mind to a new way of thinking and dealing with life. A little like rewiring my brain. Sometimes I talk about rewiring my brain, and that's basically what the program has been for me, replacing the negatives with the positives. As an atheist, what kept me here was Appendix 2 in the Big Book, which defines spiritual awakening as personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. I couldn't deal with the word God in the beginning, but personality change I could handle. Later, I saw in the doctor's opinion the phrase psychic change. That was okay for me. Everything you're going to hear from me today is about change, psychic change, personality transformation, or simply change, change, change. That's what the steps are for me, a change process. Getting well requires change. Change is hard work. There is no magic, as far as I can see. There is no free lunch. Was something I learned from my father a long time ago, one of the few good things. But we have a process for change here in OA, and it's called the 12 steps. So before we go any further, let me say, make certain if you don't know the steps in your head, that you have a copy of the 12 steps in front of you right now, because if you don't, you're not going to know what I'm talking about part of the time. Because I will reference different steps at different times as we go, and you'll get lost. So, you can find the steps at the end of your OA 12 and 12. You can pick up your four today if you've got it handy, and it's there at the end. Voices of Recovery, same thing. Or, of course, if you've got a big book handy, it's 59, page 59 in the big book. I suggest you also have some note-taking material in front of you because I'm going to give you a test at the end. No, it's supposed to be a joke. Never forget the test. But I'll bet you I will say something as I go along that you'll want to make. In fact, I promise I'll say something sometime that you'll want to make a note of and use it. That's why the way we pass this information along. We hear it from somebody, we pass it on. Most of what I say is from someplace else. What we're going to do is I'm going to talk, first of all, about one, two, three. Then I'm going to ask you to share your experience on those steps. I'll even give you some questions on the three, like an inventory. This is one, two, three, and ask you to share on those. Then we'll do the same for four through nine. My talk will take a little longer there. We're still targeting about 15 minutes sharing on the four to nine subjects. Then the same thing for 10 to 12. Hopefully that'll get us to about 4:45. Leave us about 15 minutes or so for closing and for sharing. So it is a full afternoon, and I am scripted, as you probably can tell so far. Even if I wasn't 83, about to be 84 years old, I would have to be scripted. There's so much material here, and it doesn't do any good to just wander around with it. So let's get started. Recovery for me was a three-legged stool. Learning the nature of my disease was the physical. Learning the nature of my disease and a new way of eating, a new normal, I call it. I had to take out my trigger foods. I had to learn to eat the right amounts to get to a healthy body weight. I had close to 200 pounds to go. Putting structure into my eating. For me, that was three meals a day, nothing in between. Planning what, where, when, and how. The second leg of my recovery was emotional, uncovering the attitudes and beliefs and behaviors and values that were the real problems, because food was the symptom, not the problem. As I had toxic foods, so I had toxic thinking. For me, as I cannot afford sugars and refined carbs, so too I cannot afford things like self-pity, depression, anger, resentment, fear, guilt, and shame. These are the destructive things that lead to the food drug, and therefore had to be changed if I wanted to find and sustain recovery. The third leg of that stool was, of course, spiritual. For me, as an atheist, it's been a very, very long journey, a journey within to meet my true self, to get in touch with the quiet voice deep within. Call it higher power, call it higher self, call it God, call it quiet inner voice, makes no difference. The point is, when I really get quiet enough to listen, there is something in me bigger than me that can help me, and help me and see why I was given the gift of life. In other words, why am I here? Let me run through the steps from 10,000 feet first. I'm going to spend a lot of time on this first step because to me, it's the most important step. If you aren't convinced that you have a disease over which willpower is useless, and for some of you have an addiction like I have an addiction, if you're not convinced of this, you're not going to make it. You may make it for a while, and then you'll lose it again because you'll get complacent. That's what 10, 11, and 12 are about, not getting complacent. So I spend a lot of time on the nature of the disease so that people can understand that and decide, do you have it or you don't have it? And so this is kind of a summary from 10,000 feet of the steps. In step one, we get honest with ourselves about our inability to control the food on our own. We admit that our ideas and willpower haven't worked. Step two, we come to see that there is hope, that there is a way that thousands before us have used to overcome the food compulsion. Step three, we make a decision to do something about our lives by making a commitment to take the actions outlined in the rest of the steps. We began to open our minds to a state of being teachable. So I always say surrender is not giving up, it's deciding to cooperate. And that's what we do in step three. In step four, we take a courageous look at who we really are, past and present, defining as best we can the attitudes and ideas that serve us well, and the attitudes and ideas that are at the root of our food problem, like selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear, etc. In step five, we discuss our fourth step inventory with another human being, usually someone who has gone before us through the 12 steps and who can therefore help us better understand ourselves. In step six, we work on developing the willingness to change those character traits we identified in four and five that need changing. So we identify the solutions for the defects. In seven, we take the actions that we became willing to take in step six. We ask our higher power to help us practice the new behaviors and the new thinking that will replace the shortcomings that are at the root of our problem. In eight, we again work on willingness, this time the willingness to clean up our past and take full responsibility for ourselves and our past. We become willing to make restitution to those we've harmed, including their forgiveness if they have harmed us. In nine, we make those direct restitutions to others for harms we have done them, as long as our amends will not further harm them. In 10, we continue doing on an ongoing basis all the things we have learned to do in the first nine steps. Ongoing inventory, sharing ourselves with someone else, changing those things in ourselves that need changing, making restitution when we're wrong, admitting mistakes, taking responsibility. In 11, we continue to develop our awareness and understanding of our spiritual self through prayer, meditation, and study and fellowship of others who share our journey, looking to understand our purpose and become all that higher power intends. And in 12, we pass on to others who share our disease what the program has given us. We also try to apply the principles of the steps to all parts of our daily living. So, net. In one, two, and three, we give up our will and follow directions. In 4 and 5, we identify our faults. In 6 and 7, we abandon our faults. In 8 and 9, we take responsibility for ourselves and sweep away the past. And the miracle begins to happen. The obsession is arrested. In 10, 11, and 12, we continue to grow emotionally and spiritually. Most importantly, to hold on to our freedom from the obsession, we share the path of recovery with others who suffer our disease. Why am I here after 42 years? There's no graduation. If I want to hold on to this, I've got to help people. How can I not want to help people who have my disease when this program saved my life? So let's dig now into 1, 2, and 3. We'll spend more time on 1, as I said, than some of the others for the reasons I've already said. So step 1 is written, says, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. Said another way, I have a disease over which willpower is useless, and it's messing up my life. Another way, I have a disease over which willpower, determination, and intelligence are useless. I underscore the word intelligence in that sentence out of respect for my first tough love sponsor, whose reply to my incessant arguing was, Don, your problem is you're educated beyond your intelligence. Now, at first, I thought that was a compliment. It was not. He was telling me to shut up, quit arguing, and open my mind. And that's what I had to do here. Step 1 said one more way. Food has taken over my life. I've become a slave to it. I spend most of my time thinking about it. That's what step 1 is about, coming to accept this. Let's talk about some basic definitions and relate them to the terminology in our literature, especially the doctor's opinion and the addiction cycle. Disease. What's a disease? We have a disease, right? A disease, dictionary says, it's a condition that causes a vital system in the body to not function properly. Something in us doesn't work right. In our case, the food control system doesn't work. Plus, our brain and our body react differently to certain foods than normal eaters. The area of the brain that says enough doesn't work. Plus, many of us get much more than normal pleasure from certain foods or overeating itself. Certain foods act like drugs for us, drugs for escape or comfort, even though we're unconsciously doing that. They light up the dopamine pathway in our brain, which is the center of pleasure. The reaction is to want more pleasure. This is exactly the same part of the brain affected by alcohol, cocaine, nicotine, amphetamines, and a bunch of other drugs. Same section. So when I say an addict is an addict is an addict, that's what I mean. Same part of the brain is affected. Another second definition, obsession. This is mental. Dictionary says an idea that overpowers all other ideas, a preoccupation with an often unreasonable or irrational idea, so strong that it can make us believe things that are not wrong, that are not true. That's the obsession. In other words, for example, I'll just have one. Well, it's been a long time. I'm sure it'll be fine. The obsession stops us from seeing the truth that if we have this bite, this food, we may not stop. The obsession overpowers our resolutions, our promises, our memory of the pain that overeating has caused us, and we take the first bite. That dopamine pleasure principle I talked about kicks in after we have that bite. Now, it's important to remember that there's no pleasure in our body at this point. All we're doing is arguing with ourselves. We're obsessing about the food. We haven't opened the cabinet and started yet. We haven't driven into the drive-in yet. We're just fighting it. We're just thinking about it. That's the obsession. An obsession overpowers all of our reason. What happens in the physiological is the physiological takes over once we start the eating. And that takes us to our next definition, which is compulsion slash craving. Same thing. Craving and compulsion mean the same thing. It's now physiological, right? Dictionary says irresistible impulse to do something that is often irrational or self-destructive. Irresistible. I cannot not do it. The body takes over. The mind is no longer in control. We're unable to resist with our own willpower. We give in to the obsession We have the first bite and the dopamine pleasure neurotransmitter in the brain takes over. It wants more and more and more, and we can't stop ourselves from having more, even though we know in our head it's self-destructive. That's called insanity. Addiction, we're talking about addiction here. Addiction is simply a permanent altering of that dopamine pleasure pathway that I talked about in the brain. It's unchangeable. Once this wiring is there, that's it. It's permanent, not curable, but perhaps arrestable under certain conditions. Now, some of us are born with this. Some of us have a preoccup genetic propensity for this. Look at your family. Is there alcohol? Is there food or whatever? Many of us have that. Others of us, like me, although there was a genetic propensity from my grandfather who was a gutter level alcoholic, other of us kind of earn their way into the addiction through excess. Excess of whatever as a coping mechanisms for our feeling what we are using. I argued about addiction in the beginning. I said, this is nuts. How can anybody be addicted to food? Well, I finally gave in. It wasn't all food. It was just certain junk foods that I couldn't deal with. I finally came to regard that and accept that. So all these definitions align with the lines in the doctor's opinion in the big book. On page 23 and 64 in the big book, it says, the problem centers in the thinking rather than the body. Because if we do not take the first bite, drink, the compulsion craving does not begin. It's very clear set in there. If we don't take the first drink, the first bite, it doesn't start. Therefore, what has to be the most important thing in Don's life? It still is, has been for 42 years. Don't take the damn first bite. Because if I do, I run the risk of descending back into hell from which I came. So the doctor's opinion model is the problem is mental obsession, physical allergy, the book says. Allergy, of course, that's the physiological craving compulsion. The addiction that I talked about. The solution, in the doctor's opinion, it says a complete psychic change. And how do we get the psychic change? The 12 steps. That's the model of the doctor's opinion. In that, the mental obsession is activated by thinking and feelings and attitudes. For example, in 145 of the big book, it says our worst problems are, quote, resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. The physiological compulsion or craving is activated by the first bite. We light up that dopamine pleasure pathway with that first bite of food. So, what is this psychic change that it talks about? Well, psychic change is defined in different ways, but basically, it's a change in our mental attitudes and outlook on life. Change in our attitudes and outlook on life. Changed beliefs, opinions, and attitudes. A lot of synonyms in doctor's opinion for psychic change. It says vital spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. Take your pick. It's all about changing what's going on in my head. It was those words defining spiritual awakening as personality change that kept an angry atheist like me here in the rooms. I couldn't deal with the God word, but I could identify with personality change. So I knew something wasn't working right in my brain, and I needed to be changed if I was going to stick around in this world. Suicidal thoughts were very strong and had been there for a long time. Let's take a look at a graphic of the addiction cycle that I just described. I hope we can take a look at this. Let's see what I got here. Okay, this is a chart illustrating the addiction cycle referenced in the doctor's opinion chapter of the big book. Now, I'm going to go around this with you. We're going to start at the top here with addiction cycle, and we're going to go around this way. And this is going to be all the words that I just gave you. So at 12 o'clock, by the way, I'm going to use the times. They mean nothing in real time. It's just so that you can see where it is on here. Everything starts with the feelings. And the big book talks about restless, irritable, and discontent, for those of you who know the doctor's opinion. That's the top. Everything starts with uncomfortable feelings. This could mean fear, anger, resentment, guilt, whatever it might be. We go on down then. The disease, the memory awakens because I have a disease that normal eaters don't have. The idea of food pops into my mind. Okay, we start thinking about it, and now the obsession begins as we define the obsession. Remember, it's all mental at this point. I can't stop thinking about the food. The definition of the obsession, remember, is it's an idea that overpowers all other ideas, right? A persistent, disturbing preoccupation with an irrational idea. So strong it can make me believe things that are not true. Lies such as I'll have just one, or I'm not really that bad, or I haven't had these for such a long time, I'm sure it'll be fine. Or she made it especially for me, I can't refuse it. Or any other kind of self lies. The worst thing the obsession does is crowd out all memories of the pain, or my resolutions, or promises that I've made to myself or others that I'm not going to do this anymore. Remember, that's what the obsession does. Okay, so we give in to the obsession. We give in to the obsession. We have the first bite down here at 4:30 or so. Eventually, I give in to the obsession, believe the lie. I have the first bite. Now everything changes. The disease physiology kicks in. That's the compulsion down at 6 o'clock. Physiological, another word is craving, as I said before. This is the physiological reaction in the brain that stimulates the pleasure. We now get into the binge or the spree or the out-of-control behavior, whatever it is. Eventually, though, I stop. Up to the 9 o'clock, remorse, grief, and regret. We look back, and when I say, okay, how the hell could I have done that again when I swore I wouldn't? I promised, I prayed beforehand, but all that disappeared from my mind at some point. I was like a butt robot just plowing ahead. I feel really bad about this. I'm killing myself. I have to stop. Regrets, guilt, remorse. And so then we get up to, okay, resolutions and promises. I resolve I'm never going to do that again. It was totally stupid. I'm hurting myself. I'm killing myself. I'm hurting others. I'm sacrificing a good life because I can't stop eating. I definitely won't do that again. And we may not until we get back to the top and the feelings. Back to the top, and maybe I start again. The uncomfortable feelings come up, and it all starts over. Again, without intervention, I will just go round and round and round this addiction cycle. Just think of a giant auger drilling into the ground, getting deeper and deeper and deeper because this is a progressive disease. Now, can you see the red cross marks between obsession and first bite? Those are the tools. Those lines there represent the tools. Remember, we start with bad thinking at the top. Then we get to the feelings, restless, discontent, irritated, etc. Then I give in to the obsession. I pick up the first bite, and the out of control behavior begins. But what if I'm still in the obsession? I'm arguing with myself. I haven't gone to the drive-in yet. I haven't opened the refrigerator. There is something I can do that can help me, maybe right then at that minute. And those are the tools. To help me get through the obsession and not get to the first bite, I've got a number of tools that I can use. I have a plan of eating written down and committed. I can refer to that. I can pick up the phone and call my sponsor or another member. I can grab a piece of literature, pick up the big book, 12 and 12, whatever, start reading it. I can also start writing about what I'm feeling. All these tools are little interventions that can help me. Not pick up that first bite. But of course, do they fix the real problem? No. Little interventions to keep me away from the first bite. But to get to the real problem, I have to go back to the top of the chart, to the feelings, right? And of course, where do feelings come from? They come from my thinking. And that's what the 12 steps are all about, changing my thinking. So, as I said, without intervention in the addiction cycle, an addict does this over and over and over, getting progressively worse. Let me give some final thoughts on step one and then move on to step two in the interest of time. Sorry about the technology problem. I thought it was working well before, but obviously I had some problems. All right, some final thoughts on one. I have a disease. It is a permanent but very manageable disability. There is a treatment plan, though, that works. Second point, while I have an illness of the body, the mind, and the spirit, the main problem is in my mind, because if I don't give in to the obsession and pick up the first bite, the compulsion doesn't start. Three, once an addict, always an addict. The disease doesn't go away, it's only arrested. I wish it did, but it doesn't. Four, because I have the disease, I can't deal with food like people who don't have the disease do. And this is a biggie for us, for many of us. You go for a very long period of abstinence, things get really nice, and you kind of forget that underneath that this disease is still there. And so you say, well, I had to spend a long time, and you have one, and the next thing you know, you can't stop. Fifth point, if I fail to plan, I plan to fail. Without a daily plan of eating, I leave myself vulnerable to impulses and old habits. Normal eaters eat according to how they feel when they want it. I can't afford that. Plan of eating, the definition of abstinence is the same for all members, but the details of the plan of eating for each member may differ depending upon the compulsive food behaviors we're engaged in. You know, there's overeating, there's undereating, there's purging, etc. But a plan of eating is a tool to help OA members maintain their abstinence. There are many plans of eating. It's whatever you and your sponsor, your nutritionist, or whatever decide is the right one for you. But it's only you that can define that. You're the only one that can define what are your problem foods. The seventh point on the first step, following my plan of eating divorces, that's a word that I like here, divorces my food from my thinking. No matter how I feel, this is what I'm going to eat. I do a plan. Now, I don't, if, even if my butt falls off, I'm saying, this is still what I'm going to eat. This is it. This is it. And that's important. Another point, overfueling my body with excess food. Took me a while to see this, but after a while in the program, within 6 months or so, I saw this. Excess food clouds my thinking, diminishes my intellectual capacity, reduces my productivity, blocks my connection to the spirit within, and keeps me from being all that I can be. You know, repeated overfueling of my body eventually breaks it down, and all the systems designed to keep it in good working order are broken down. Last point, I'll never gain immunity because my body's food control system is permanently different from normal eaters. I am always and forever vulnerable to the trigger foods. It just is. You can argue with this, whatever works for you. Remember, there's no one thing that works in this program for everybody. I'm telling you my experience and what I know. I will go to the grave having the same trigger foods. Let's move on.
Done. 30
two.
minutes, Don.
30 minutes. All right. Let me see if I can cover these two in about 15. Step two, step of hope. Hope is the growing belief that there's a way to arrest my obsessive compulsive addiction, a way that will lead me from misery and shame to peace and harmony. I build this hope on my new knowledge that thousands before me have found a way out of the disease through the 12 steps. We're about to be 65 years old. Why do we still exist? Obviously, something works here. Remember that. But it only works if we work it, right? So here we are. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, is the way it's written. And it said another way, came to believe that something beyond my willpower and my thinking can restore me to rational eating and rational thinking. Or another way, came to believe that there is a process, the 12 steps, that can restore me to sane eating and sane thinking. Some definitions, back to the definitions again. It says, came to believe. What's a belief? A belief is an idea, dictionary. An idea is in which some level of confidence is felt. Step two, we come to believe that something can help us. What about that word sanity? That bothered me a lot too. Sanity. Are you kidding? I'm not a schizophrenic, blah, 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 blah. Then my sponsor said, look it up. Definition of sanity. The definition of sanity is sound reasoning, sound judgment, wholeness of mind, the ability to discern truth. Insanity then is, the definition of insanity is unsound reasoning and judgment. Unable at times to discern truth. Is it sane to do things that we know are self-destructive? Is it sane to say we're not going to do something and then do it anyway? Is it sane to do the same things over and over and over and expect different results? Is it sane to expect that our disease will be arrested if we do nothing, if we take no actions? The OA 12 and 12 notes on page 11, quote, "Our true insanity could be seen in the fact that we kept right on trying to find comfort in excess food long after it began to cause us misery." End of quote. What's higher power? Simply something more powerful than my willpower, a power greater than ourselves. Big Book Appendix 2, as I mentioned before, quote, "With few exceptions, we members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves." End of quote. What about the program itself as higher power? Why should I believe that something here in OA, a new set of ideas maybe, can help me with my food problem and all of my craziness? Because people in the room say it works. Because the book says it works. That's why I should believe. It's the recovery around me and the fellowship that gives me hope, the hope that I need to keep going and doing whatever you tell me that has worked for you. While I didn't quite understand in the beginning where this power was coming from that gave me hope, been inspired by action. In retrospect, I can see, and again, retrospect, hindsight is great. I can see my higher powers included my sponsor, my plan of eating, the big book, the love of people in the rooms, the 12 steps as a spiritual healing program. In other words, the collective power of the program is what kept me going, drove me forward. If there had been no recovery in the rooms that I was in, I wouldn't be here. Keep that in mind in your own meetings, right? If newcomers are there, if they don't see recovery and hear recovery, they don't know what the word means. But if they don't hear something that's positive, why should they come back? No credibility. Some quotes from the 12 and 12, page 26 in the AA 12 and 12. "Take it easy. The hoop you have to jump through is a lot wider than you think." That was me arguing about the God thing. That was an important quote for me. And on the same page, it says, first, AA does not demand that you believe anything. Secondly, to get sober and to stay sober, you don't have to swallow all of step two right now. Third, all you really need is an open mind. Just resigned from the debating society. Page 27. I had only to stop fighting and practice the rest of AA's program as enthusiastically as I could. In other words, the rest of the steps. So, final thoughts on step two. My higher power, as I look back, clearly was the program. I came to believe that the program, whatever that was, could help me solve my problem. Again, that tough love sponsor said, "You're only on the second and third, Don. You're not supposed to understand all this God stuff yet. The 12 steps says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So you have a long way to go, God, Don. Keep moving, keep going, keep going. Trust the process." Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. On the timer, I'll take 10 minutes and we'll close on this one.
That's perfect. 10 more. Yep.
Yep. Said another way, made a decision to turn my thinking and behavior and circumstances of my life over to the 12-step recovery process and the principles for living laid out in the steps. Made a decision to turn my will over to the program. As I look back to the beginnings of my recovery, there were two primary things that gave me the willingness to surrender to this program. One was the pain and misery of my life. And two was letting go of the ideas that I had about independence, as in I thought self-sufficiency was the highest virtue man could obtain. Got that from my father. Real men don't ask for help. Not only was that wrong, but it kept me from reaching out for help, right? I didn't want to need others or depend on others. That was the prideful independence that nearly took me to the grave. Some of the questions I asked myself about before I committed to it, do I like myself? Do I respect myself? Am I living the way I want to live? Do I cover up the real me most of the time? Would I rather be by myself than with others? Am I angry, quietly or otherwise? Do I feel a little out of step with the rest of the world? The answer to these questions helped me to see that my way wasn't working, and I needed to bring my brain in for some house cleaning and reprogramming. I got that. I didn't know where I was going, but I trusted the process because all these crazy people around me said it worked. It was working for them. And so I kept going. Basic definitions. What is will? Well, my will is what I want. Me, what I think is right. What choices I should make, what course in my life I should take, what I think other people should and should not do. Self, self, self. Made a decision to turn my will. That's what that is. My life, well, where am I? What's my situation? What's happening minute by minute? Just what's going on in my life right now? That's my life. Decision, the act of making up one's mind, a position, opinion, or judgment reached after consideration. Made a decision to turn a will. Well, a decision is total delusion unless it's followed by action. A decision takes action to fulfill it. You can decide whatever you want to decide if you don't do something, right? You can go and say, okay, I commit to the third step. If you don't follow it up with action, you get nowhere. Surrender. To commit to following a route other than ours, to commit to following a new set of ideas. And that was the main thing, a new set of ideas. Bondage of self, release me of the bondage of self, it says. Controlled by selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Our thinking is focused on me. That's all I can see. Big Book, page 17, quote, if we want to live free of this killing disease, we accept help without reservation from a power greater than ourselves, and we begin taking the actions that will allow us to receive that help. Next page. No, this is in OA 12 and 12, page 18. We know that in order to do this, we need to work the remaining nine steps of the program out of the third step in the Big Book. So I've worked and continued to work step three at several different levels. When I started OA 42 years ago, the first step was simply accepting that I had the disease. Second step was coming to believe that something could help. The third step was deciding to sign up for the course, to commit to try what others had worked. That is, to go ahead and work the steps. In essence, I turned my behavior, my thinking over to something else. The steps, the directions in the book, the people in the rooms, those were my higher powers, although I wasn't as concise about then as I am now. I couldn't see that then, but that's what kept me going. So net net on third step, and I'll close up for now. Step three for me was making the decision to open my mind and try another path, even if I didn't quite understand it or know exactly where it went. The path was, of course, the 12 steps and the nine tools. I made the decision to gather up my courage and take the actions. In my brain, I sort of signed a contract to do the work. I surrendered to the 12 steps. Surrendering wasn't giving up for me, it was deciding to cooperate with something that had been working for people in AA at that time for like 50 years. Now it's almost 90 years. There were many actions to take day by day to find my freedom, but ultimately, all those actions resulted in the creation of a new person, ultimately, free of the food obsession. All right, we're going to stop there and we're going to open it up for sharing. And believe it or not, I'm going to give you. I have a step inventory thing I use. And one of the questions I use on step one is, have I gotten honest with myself, except that I have a progressive and potentially fatal disease? Step two, do I know that there is something greater than me that can lead me out of this? Three, have I surrendered myself to this new set of ideas, the steps? Have I gotten honest and accepted that I have it? Do I know there's a way out? Have I surrendered to a new set of ideas? So we'll open it up for sharing. I believe they're going to do 2 minutes of sharing. We'll go about 15 minutes. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back and work on 4 to 9. So I'll turn it back over to whoever is
It's
controlling the hands. So
Judy.
put yourself up to share.